What up, guys? Welcome to the New American Dream Podcast. I'm your host, George Gibson. All right, we got another great show. I know you like every show is great, but today we definitely have one of the best shows that's came out so far, because this guy understands it's not just about, you know, making money in real estate. It's about taking total control of your life. And, you know, what better way to use that than, you know, real estate or just having different streams of income. But before we get into the show, I know you're like, George, you haven't been putting out podcasts. What's going on? Well, actually, you know, if you're alive and got any kind of post, the real estate market is just going through the roof. So as you know, I am a realtor. So it's just really been busy. You know, you put a property on the market and it sell before you even, you know, check your phone or look at your phone. The property is already in the contract. So yes, real estate is definitely going up, and I'm located in Florida. So if anybody is thinking about investing in Florida and you're long distance, definitely you can reach out. You can send an email to george1.gibson@yahoo.com if you want more information on, you know, investing in South Florida. But yes, but before we get into the show, also, I want people to know that, you know, right now it's a great time to be an entrepreneur. And we talk about it in today's show. Many millennials are understanding the value of having control of their time and knowing that, you know, a 9-to-5 is great, but, you know, working 9-to-5, 5 days a week takes up a lot of your time. And so a lot of people are, you know, looking into doing different side jobs where, you know, you have more control of your time. So if that is you and it sounds like that's something you're interested in, please, 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 please check out, you know, Real Estate One-on-One with George Duke Real Estate. I have been helping and coaching people for the last year. And the crazy part about it is, you know, the people I have, you know, helped coach, they're all buying properties now. So, you know, things are working. I feel more confident about telling you to sign up for the course because I know what I'm telling people is working. So check it out. You can text 772-713-3633, text real estate, and you will receive a text message on, you know, how to sign up for George Duke Real Estate 101. Some people want to quit that 9-to-5, which that was my goal. Some people want to learn how to just get started, or some people just want to buy a house. But definitely you can reach out either using Instagram or texting that number 772-713-3633. Just text real estate. That's all you have to do. And you will receive the link to sign up for the course. So enough of me. Today's guest, he's definitely one you want to follow. And after this episode, I won't have to tell you to follow him. You will look him up yourself. But he owned over 250 rental properties. He is a podcast host. He's also an author and also a speaker. So he's definitely had his hands full. And he basically today we talk about, you know, how important, and we want more people in the world to take control of their time and just be happy. You know, a lot of people go to work and they're not really excited about that job. They're just there to receive a paycheck. And then some people love their job. So we're all about finding happiness and, you know, living the best life possible. You know, your dream life. That's what I want everybody to live, because, you know, as you know, I used to work my job, and it was a great life, but it wasn't my dream life. I want you to live. You only get one life. We want the best life you can live. Enough of me talking. Today's guest is Jeffrey Host. Welcome to the show. Let's go. Hello.
Jeff. Sorry about that. It was just like giving me the little spinning wheel of death. And I use Zoom all the time, like everyone in the world these days. So
no, it's definitely me. Is it working good?
I'm surprised at that. You're kind of frozen actually for a second there.
This is my mother's guest house suite. I was trying to do it over here because it's empty. But that's not going to work because the Wi-Fi is too far away.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah, I was trying to get a different background. Give me like 2 minutes.
Dude, take your time, man. This is my last one today. This third podcast in a row. I'm not on a hard deadline anymore, though. So
right. All right. Let me go get my mic. I was trying. It's not freezing up no more, is it?
No, it seems fine.
All right. Let me go get my other stuff.
All right. Cool. Well, I moved away from your screen for a second, so I apologize if you can't see me and I look funny.
Say it again.
I said I moved away for a second, so let me know when you're ready and I'll move back. I mean, you probably can see me, but I'm like looking at a different screen. So
now you're good. I was trying to get a different background for this podcast, but that ain't work.
Yeah, it happens. I wouldn't worry about it too much. 221. What's this one? 630. I just realized I haven't like balanced my like one business checkbook in a while. And I was like, I wonder if there's any money in there. Turns out there is, but not very much. And my Verizon bill automatically charges to it. So I'm going to have to address that. Let's see. So where's that one? 630. What is that? Oh, that's when I bought a new cell phone. That makes sense. Sorry, I'm just talking to myself here, so sorry about that.
Oh, yeah, you're good. I'm just trying to get back to my normal setup.
Take your time. Like I said, I'm in really no hurry at all.
So were you recording as a guest on a podcast or were you
doing your Yeah, podcast? I did two of them today, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, you're number three, man. You should feel happy about that. When you sent that scheduling link back over, I went, oh, I got two. I might as well just do a third one right in a row and just get a ton, you know?
Right.
Let's see how close I am.
I think I'm just about ready.
That's okay. I'm just about caught up to where I needed to be, so that works out well. This one. So,
let's see.
Okay, 70. What's this one? 1450. That doesn't make any sense. Gosh darn it. What am I missing? My spreadsheet says I have more money than I do. That's always annoying. Ah, right here. There it is. 317.99. Best Buy. If you're ready, just let me know. I'll come back. I'm not that I can figure this out later if I don't figure it out now, you know?
Yeah, no, when you're ready, I'm pretty much.
All right, cool. Well, let me jump back over there in just 1 second. 6:30. This makes no sense, George.
Hey, you're smarter than me using a spreadsheet, at least.
I suppose. But it still doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm missing something, and I don't know what it is. And 525, hotel, 519. What? 519, what the heck? What is this one? 127, check for it. That's it right there. 179 on 517. I think that's it right there. 179.04. 517.179.04. I should use a spreadsheet more apparently because I haven't updated it in a long time.
So you're off. See you in Tennessee, right?
I am. Where are you at?
I'm in Florida.
What part of Florida?
Vero Beach, Florida. It's probably it's a smaller town, but it's probably like an hour from West Palm Beach, hour from Orlando.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool, cool. All right. Well, I'm not going to be able to figure this out right now, so we're just going to have to not worry about it for right now. We got a lot closer. So I can see something that's obviously $45 right now. $45. All right. Give me like 2 more seconds. Sorry, because it's just so much easier if I...
All right, you're good. You
know, if I don't skip this step, because I've already looked through this, so like it should jump out at me, you know. 1785. What is that? 6-1. 6-1. No, that's there. 621. Whatever. I will figure it out later. All right. Back to Zoom. Cool.
All right. So since this is your third podcast, I'm going to try to make this as difficult as possible so it won't be boring.
Oh, yeah, no worries, man. I like it. I like it. Let's make it a challenge. The New American Dream Podcast.
Yes. So it's Jeffrey Holst, right? That's how you say
Holst,
it?
Yeah. Like a holster, like from a gun.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I don't have to explain anything. This is your third one for today. So we're going to just jump right into it.
Yeah, I'm a host of 2 podcasts, and I've been on about 150 podcasts, so I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, we got it.
Yeah,
but you haven't been on New American Dream podcast, though, so.
I will be now, though.
Yes. All right. So, welcome to the show. We have Jeffrey Holst. How you doing?
I am good, George. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. I'm excited. You got a big-time guest today. So you got over 250 rental units, right?
I do, yeah.
Yes, so I know that must keep you busy. So let's start off from the beginning. All right, tell us about a little bit about who you are and exactly what you do.
Okay, well, first I want to dissuade a rumor here. I'm actually not busy. I do way more podcasting than I do rental property investing because I believe that you should structure your life in a way that makes it so it doesn't absorb all of your time. So that's my thing. So they don't actually keep me that busy, but it is a lot of fun. Now, what do I do? Or how did I start into real estate? What was the question?
No. All right. So you do real estate and you do podcasts. So, sure. All right, we'll start from the beginning. Where were you raised up at and how was your childhood?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, listen, I grew up in a upper middle class family in Michigan, Grand Rapids area. My dad was a lawyer. My mom was a school teacher, but she was mostly a stay-at-home mom. Everything went pretty well for my early childhood. My parents divorced when I was, around when I was 18, but they separated when I was like 14 or 15 and they were off and on. So, you know, there was childhood trauma, you know, the stuff that we all go through. You know, bad relationships and whatnot, all that kind of stuff in my life. But I mean, pretty good, solid upbringing. Could have been a lot worse. I mean, there's a lot of people that had it a lot harder than I did growing up. So,
right. So now that you know, it seemed like you are a serial entrepreneur. Were your parents talking to you about far as business and money growing up?
How was that?
Yeah, so my dad was always a business guy. He looked at law as his, one of his businesses, and he always had other businesses as well, rental properties. We had a miniature golf course and an ice cream store for a while when I was a kid. Consequently, I got really good at miniature golf and fat at the same time. So don't maybe not the best strategy, but still both of those things, it turns out. So if you ever want a little miniature golf competition, you let me know. Bad at the regular golf, though. So we always had some of that stuff. But, you know, my mom was less interested in the business side of stuff. It's not that she didn't care about it. It's not that she didn't help us help my dad run the businesses. She did. She ran the miniature golf course in the ice cream store in the summers, which is why I spent a lot of time out there, you know, stuff like that. And my dad had a sawmill for a while, oil well, I think at one point, cows at another point. I mean, you know, so we had all this different stuff going on. So I definitely had exposure to it. But, you know, we didn't talk about it that much. It was just something that just happened. You know, we knew it happened. My dad would go do these things, and my mom would complain about them, you know, say like, right, he's spending all of his time doing this and not spending time here or whatever. Like, you know, that's between them, I guess. So,
yeah. So, all right. It's a common trait, though. Your dad seemed like he was a great business guy, and you had a firsthand look, you know, maybe not talked about it much, but you observed a lot of your dad's qualities and his skills. What is some of the things you think you learned by just watching him like a fly on the wall? What are some of the things that you picked up and you use today?
Well, it's about, to me, it's about looking at opportunities in a different way, right? So a lot of people look at money and they say, oh, you know, money's only for rich people. Well, rich people certainly do have more money than non-rich people, but money doesn't care if you're rich or poor, right? Like, money just goes to whoever's providing value. And I don't know that I would have said this when I was 12 or 14 or whatever, but when I look back at it now, it seems to me that if you provide a lot of value to the world, you get rewarded by the world. The universe gives you more money if you provide more value. And so when you look at a business opportunity, you see this, like when you watch like Shark Tank or something, you know, or like, you know, any of these like reality television shows, they really always talk about like, what's the value add? What am I providing? Like, what service is it? Like, how is that service valuable? What can I do better than somebody else can do? And, you know, I think that was sort of subconsciously like absorbed, not as much as like following my dad around and being like, oh, how does he make this decision or that decision? Because we didn't really talk about it. Like, it just was something he did. Later, when I was in school and when I worked for other companies and stuff, I think, you know, I was influenced by some of those folks as well. You know, and I try to think at it, you know, like, okay, if I own this business, how would I be making this decision? And I think that came from just seeing, you know, my dad making decisions from the perspective of an owner versus an employee. And there is a huge difference in how owners look at things than employees look at things.
Right. So I haven't been to Tennessee, but lately I've been in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and even in Florida, a common thing right now is like franchises, restaurants, they are desperate need for employees. Everywhere I go, like I went to McDonald's, I don't know if you got Zaxby in Tennessee, but they were closed in the middle of the day because not enough staff.
So I'll tell you, I've been traveling a lot myself, and in Michigan right now, all of the fast food restaurants are drive-through only because they don't have enough staff to staff the insides. And, you know, this cafe I go to down the street from here in Chattanooga ends up closing in the middle of the lunch hour every day because they need to like give their couple of employees they have time to catch up. So they'll just like lock the door and put a sign up that says we're temporarily closed due to staffing issues. And they like let them catch up, and then they like unlock the door, and then they let them get behind a little bit, and then they lock the door again. And it's crazy out there right now.
Yeah, but I think, you know, the pandemic, when it, you know, they gave out a lot of, you know, extra money, a lot of people had the opportunity to have more money than needed, and they started, what'd you say? You said, of what value do they bring? So people started figuring out their skills, and they realized that job they were going to was just, you know, it's just a time for trading time for money. But now more people are looking at, all right, how can I make the world a better place? What value or what skills do I have, or what do I pursue? What do I love? I think a lot of millennials are figuring out, like, hey, what are my skills? What are my purpose in life? I think that's like a, that's why people are not just working for money like it used to.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And I think that's great. I just was saying to someone recently that I'm actually really optimistic about the future because of that. Is it a struggle right now if you run a fast food restaurant? Yeah, no doubt, right?
Yes.
And that'll fix itself, right? Like part of the struggle is the businesses haven't recognized that the labor pool is smaller. And when the labor pool is smaller and demand is higher, that means you have to raise your prices. So, and you're starting to see that, like the store, the McDonald's down the street has a sign on it. It says, you know, now starting, you know, day labor or whatever at $15 an hour. Like that was a $7.58 an hour job like 2 years ago. That's a crazy amount of inflation in that low wage position. But it's needed. Like that's what we have to do right now, because like you said, a lot of people are doing different things. They're doing online things. They're doing things that don't require them to punch a time clock necessarily. You know, if you're doing a podcast and you can make some money on your podcast, then like, why wouldn't you just do more podcasts? Like, why would you want to go flip burgers? Like I don't want to flip burgers. Like every once in a while, I'm tempted to take a job at the cafe so that they don't have to close in the middle of the day, cause I feel sorry for them, but it's not cause I want to do that work. I get sick of it in like 2 minutes.
Yeah. That's funny. I think it's mostly like, I got a lot of nieces and nephews and they are literally running McDonald's. Like, you know, the highest age might be 24 years old. So you got a whole bunch of kids running these franchises, you know, it's like,
yeah, but you know, that's a really, like, honestly, like, that's a really good thing for those your nieces and nephews, right? Like that experience, like McDonald's, you know, all of the franchises, really, they're really, really well designed businesses.
Correct.
Like there's a reason there's a gazillion of them. And if you go into that job not thinking, oh man, I'm trading my time for money, like I'm flipping burgers or whatever. But instead you go into it and go, I'm going to learn from one of the best businesses in the world how to be a better business person. Then it's totally worth it. You should go there for free, right? Like,
yes.
You know, they ought to pay you. They're paying you and you ought to pay them for the education you're getting if you're looking at it right. And when I worked at an Arby's a long time ago, I remember saying the reason I took the job, I had two other jobs at the time. I didn't even really have time to do it. I was going to school full time. I had two other jobs. One was full time. And I walked in because a friend of mine said, hey, you know, we're really looking for some people. And my boss was, you know, just do me a favor and go to this interview, basically. And I was like, okay. I talked to the boss and I remember it really, really well. Like I talked to the guy and I said to him, I said, you know, hey, I don't really want to work here. like I want to be a billionaire. Like, why would I want to work at Arby's, you know? And I don't want to be a billionaire anymore, but that's what I said to him at the time. And he goes, you know, the guy who owns Arby's, he started out, you know, slicing roast beef on the line. And I was like, that can't be, it's a franchise. And I went home and researched it. It turns out the guy actually did start out. He did really well. He learned the business. He bought his first franchise. Then he bought a couple more and then a couple more and then a couple more. And then he bought out the corporation.
Wow.
The guy's like literally a billionaire. And he started like slicing roast beef on a back line at an Arby's. And I went, how about I have something to learn from this company? Like these people know what they're doing. And they had all these cool things. Like if you found a way to save the company money, they would give you a huge bonus based on it. So like the guy who was the boss of the Arby's, when he first started working at Arby's, they had black trash bags. And he was like, you should have clear trash bags. And they were like, why? They're like, and he was like, cause that way, if someone throws a tray away, you can see it and grab it out.
Are you kidding?
And they implemented that like the whole chain wide, and he got like $5,000 in the first year in bonuses. And this is like, you know, a long time ago. So $5,000 was a lot of money because he was older than me. And this was like 20 years before he told me the story. So it's probably like 40 years ago, right? So it's like the equivalent of like $20,000 now at a time when he probably made like $15,000 a year, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That is all right. That reminded me because my dad, we went to Chick-fil-A maybe like a month ago, and my dad, he seen the line. He was like, "Man, why are you going here? You know, the line's so long." He didn't realize Chick-fil-A system where
they're so fast. Yes, it's crazy.
So by the time we got our food, right? Like at the first, he was like, "Go somewhere else. The line's too long." I'm like, "Dad, they go fast." So by the time we got our food, the first thing he said was, "Whoever came up with this idea is rich is blank." You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, that's exactly right. And the thing is, like, Chick-fil-A is crazy. Like, it's got a line all the time. And you know what? I would rather eat at a Chick-fil-A. I don't even really like fast food. I don't even really like Chick-fil-A that much. But I would rather go to Chick-fil-A than any other fast food restaurant. And you know why?
Why?
Because I don't want to wait in line. And there could be two cars ahead of me at a Burger King, right? And I go to Chick-fil-A, there's 50 cars ahead of me, and I'll get through the line faster.
Exactly.
And I'm something against Burger King. I shouldn't pick on them because I'm sure there are lots of good Burger Kings out there. And I actually prefer Burger King's food to Chick-fil-A's food. Like, if you want to know the truth, I actually really like myself a original chicken sandwich from Burger King. I think it's good. Like, it's a good sandwich.
Yeah.
But you know, if I'm in a hurry, I'm going to Chick-fil-A.
That is definitely, that system, you know, they have set up. And my dad was like, they should go to Burger King, McDonald's, Taco Bell, and like whoever, you know, came up with this two-line system, they should teach them about it.
Well, and you see them, and they got two-line systems, and they got little iPads or whatever, and they're out taking your order, like, at the corner. And by the time you get up there, the order's like, you don't even have to tell them what you want. They've already ordered it for you, paid for it. If they can run it out to you, they run it out to you, and you just shoot off the line. Like, it's crazy, right? Like, I mean, it's, like, so amazing how efficient they are.
Yes. All right, let's start. All right, we'll try to get back so we can help some people.
Sure.
All right. So, all right. As a kid, did you see yourself being the person you are today? Or what was your, like, in high school, what did you vision your life being like? Was it this, or was it, you know, working at a corporation all day?
Well, honestly, like, I went to law school and became a lawyer. I did that because I wanted to make money. My dad was a lawyer. It seemed like the right idea. That's like what, I mean, I'm, you know, you model your role models, right? Like, I mean, this is what it is. But that's the wrong reason to go to law school. Actually, I love law school. I didn't really love being a lawyer. So when I was a kid, I thought, well, I'm going to grow up, I'm going to be a lawyer and make money. I'm going to go travel. That was like really my whole strategy. It's like, I'm going to make money and then I'm going to go travel. I liked the idea of being a lawyer because my dad had more time off some of the time. You know, like, if he wanted to take a month off, he took a month off, but he never did. And I thought that he could just do it whenever he wanted because he was his own boss. But it turns out you got bills to pay and you have clients to service and all this stuff. It's like really difficult to do that as a lawyer. I'd probably still be a lawyer now, but I got diagnosed with leukemia about 4 years after I started practicing law. I was a bankruptcy attorney, and I ended up, because of the leukemia, not being able to work for a long time, and ended up being forced into personal bankruptcy in 2010. And so when that happened, I went, huh, like, I might die. If I die, I can't make money. If I don't work, I can't make money, right? And I need to figure out a way to make money even if I'm not working, because I need my wife to be okay. And that's when I got into real estate. I was like, I need to get into real estate. I need to, like, make sure I have some money coming in no matter what happens to me.
Yeah.
And I didn't plan on retiring early. I wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna go buy a bunch of real estate and not work. It just worked out that way, really. Like, I mean, honestly, I bought a bunch of real estate. And then one day my corporate job that I took after I quit practicing law said, we're selling to a different corporation. And I was like, I don't want to work for another corporation. This is already a crappy job. And they were like, well, you can have a severance package. And I was like, I'll take it. And I never went back to work.
So now, I mean, when you just said you had leukemia, and that shift, like, it changed you, right? As a person.
Sure. Did for sure. Yeah.
And I mean, I think some people take life for granted if they don't, I ain't gonna say have a life threatening in it, you know, some life threatening, but it definitely put life in perspective.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you don't need to wait to get leukemia. I mean, try to avoid it actually, but you don't need to wait for that in order to realize that you only have this one chance at life, right? Some people do extraordinary things without ever going through these terrible life-changing experiences. Some people, they have to go to rock bottom first, you know, maybe their drugs or alcohol or suicidal tendencies. Some people have illnesses or one of their family members or friends will die tragically. But there are other people that just like are amazing and do amazing things. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a great example of this. Like, forget about his politics or whatever, but like Arnold Schwarzenegger is a 15-year-old kid in Austria. He doesn't speak English. He sees a magazine cover and there's a muscular guy on the magazine cover with a hot blonde chick. And he says to his friend, and I assume an Austrian or German or whatever he spoke, right? He said, "Who is that guy? I want to be like that guy." And his friend's like, "That's Mr. Universe. He's an American movie star and like the world's best bodybuilder." And he goes, "I will be Mr. Universe," you know, like 15 years old. And he lives in a farm in like a rural area of Austria. And then he just like, he doesn't even know how to lift weights. He doesn't have weights. There isn't even a gym to lift weights. So he makes his own weights out of like, you know, rocks and stuff. And like 15 and like at 18, he becomes the youngest Mr. Universe ever. And then when they interview him and they say, you know, like, "Well, what do you want to do next?" He's like, "I'm going to be a famous American movie star." He doesn't speak English, right? Like, right. "I want to be a famous American movie star." And then he says, "I will be the first American movie star to be paid $1 million for a single movie." Wow. And then he becomes that, right? I mean, that's crazy. Well, like, it doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't, but... You know, when I listen to that, the people listen to this, I think that just goes to show you how powerful the mind is, because, you know, your thoughts basically came reality.
Yeah. And in his book, Total Recall, is his autobiography. He talks about that exact thing. He said, like, the reason I'm successful is when I decide to do something, I don't allow myself to consider failure. Like, I'm going to do whatever it takes. And by the way, the guy's a self-made millionaire before he's a movie star. He made his money originally in apartment complexes in California.
Wow, I didn't know that. I thought he just did acting.
Yeah, exactly. That's what everyone thinks. Like, so he's a self-made millionaire, apartment investor, seven-time Mr. Universe. No one's come close since, right?
Right.
Most famous Mr. Universe by far. Like, can you name another one? No, right? Marries into the Kennedy family and then runs for governor as a Republican and wins the governorship in California as a Republican. Yeah. I mean, like, that's just nonsense. Like, none of that stuff makes sense, right?
I'm about to order his book after we get off.
You should, actually. The Audible is amazing, actually. I highly recommend it. And if any of your listeners know Arnold, you should recommend him to both your show and my show, because I'd love to talk to them. Like, so if anybody listening knows Arnold, please give him my number. I want to interview him on my show. And, you know, that's my big passion now, right? Is talking to people that do extraordinary things and learning from them and sharing with my audience how they too can live extraordinary lives. I love that. I mean, the real estate stuff is amazing. Like, it's been super freeing and, you know, I buy apartment complexes and it's great, but like, that's not for everyone. But what is for everyone is that they need to figure out how to live the best possible version of their life. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is if you don't have to trade time for money. Like, you have to figure out how to buy back your time as fast as possible. If you're 20 years old right now, don't look at it and go, "I can't wait till I'm 70. Like, you know, I'm gonna go take this job and work for 45 or 50 years at the same company." Like, that's not realistic in today's market anyway. But even if it were realistic, it's a terrible deal. Why would you trade the 50 best years of your life so that you can have 5 years of retirement? It's a terrible deal. Like, and also for that matter, 9 to 5. Yeah, that's better than, you know, 9 to 9 or whatever. But like, why should you be giving up that much of your life? Like, why should you give up 5 days of your week to have 2 days off? Another bad deal. Or 50 weeks of your year to have 2 weeks off. Terrible. 50 for two. You know what, George? If you want to give me $50, I'll give you $2. What do you think? You want to make that deal right now?
Definitely not.
Right. But people do this all the time. Yeah. It's insane. Figure it out. So these millennials you were talking about earlier that are like doing different things to like learn and not have to, you know, be a burger flipper for the rest of their life. That's freaking awesome.
Yes.
It's really freaking awesome. And I hope you're right that that's why there's a labor shortage right now. I think that's part of it. I don't think it's all of it. But I really do, really, really, really do believe that anybody, no matter what their background, can and will, if they want to, find a way to be successful. And you have to do it. Like, there are tons of different paths. You know, real estate's my path. Right. But you can write best-selling books, be movie stars, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, there are ways to become successful, and you're much more likely to be successful if you're doing things that you love.
Exactly. So did you have a mentor once you started in real estate, or were you just like figuring it out as you go?
You know, I kind of figured it out as I went, but I mean, I knew people that were in real estate, you know, I had exposure. I'd read books. I'd watched, you know, listened to CDs back in the day previous to, you know, what we do now, you know, Audibles and stuff. But I mean, I'd done that kind of stuff, but mostly we just tried it and see what worked. And I'm glad I did it that way, because what I do is a little bit different than what anyone else I really know do, how they do it, how they structure it. And now now I do things more traditional, but when we started, we didn't have any money. I just filed bankruptcy, so I didn't have any credit. And I was like, I got to figure this out. So I had to be creative, you know, I had to talk to people about my ideas, and I had to get really good at convincing people that I was just a smart guy that had a bad situation and they should give me some of their money to buy real estate.
Yeah.
And that really helped. I mean, it really does. Like having to be scrappy like that, it makes it so I don't worry about stuff. But I know if I can do it, so can you. Like, anyone can do it. Like, you can go. And I know the market's harder now, and I know I had good timing and all that, and none of that was my fault. Like, it was just luck, right? Like, I went bankrupt in 2010. If I went bankrupt today, it'd be harder to buy real estate than it was in 2010. But, you know, you take advantage of the situation you're in.
Right.
You know, Hal Elrod, who's the author of Miracle Morning. I don't know if you've read that book or not, but it's a great book.
No, I heard of it. Yes.
Yeah. So he has this quote, and I'll probably butcher it, but the quote's like, the moment you accept full responsibility for everything in your life is the moment you can change anything in your life. Think about that for a second, right? Like I could sit there and go, oh man, this sucks, I got leukemia. Or I can be like, wow, this sucks, I got leukemia. Now what am I going to do about it? Right? Like, those are my choices. Or, man, I went bankrupt. This sucks. I'm going to have to go get a job now and be sad all the time. Or I can say, look, it's my responsibility. Like, it might not be my fault, but if I had invested in real estate before I got sick, then I would have income coming in. I wouldn't have ended up bankrupt. You know what I mean? So I can accept that I made a mistake. Right. And that if I had done things differently, it might have turned out different. And that's fine. But more important than that, I can look at the situation I'm in right now and I can say, okay, Jeff, here's where you're at. If you were advising someone the best strategy for where you're at right now, what would it be? Good. Go do that. Right. And that's what you have to do. You have to say, okay, what am I going to do? Like, okay, great. You got leukemia. Now what are you going to do about it? Like, are you going to get healthy? You know, you had a stroke, you had a heart attack, you know, go lose some weight. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm terrible at losing weight, right. But like, I own that. Like, I know it's my fault. I could fix it. I don't take enough responsibility for it.
Yeah. So that was a lot, but, the only thing I don't really, like about, you know, the internet and Instagram and all this is because the people who are really successful, sometimes I don't think they tell the people who watching them or who want to be successful about their failures or how they overcame.
So true. Yeah.
So, because I know a lot of times, like even me, you know, I try. I fail more than anybody, but I don't give up. That is like the key.
Fail forward, right? I mean, you learn from your mistakes. And here's the thing, like, I've had plenty of failures in my life, right? I know for sure that I went bankrupt. Like, I just told you that, right? That's not great. Objectively, that's not a very good strategy from a financial perspective.
No,
right?
It's not.
Like, it's like dropping an A-bomb on your credit. Also, it sets you back a long ways. And even when I went bankrupt because I had student loans, I had a negative $100,000 net worth, like no assets. And I still owed $100,000 in student loans when it was done, right? Jeez. So I was in a pinch, no doubt, right? But listen, and you know, everyone has to walk their own path, right? Like, everyone's going to have failures. But what you have to do is you have to have a lot of confidence that you can figure it out. And you need to look at that. This is back to that radical responsibility, the Hal Elrod quote. It's like, you have to accept that, like, when stuff happens, because good and bad stuff's going to happen to everyone every single day, right? Like, it's going to happen. That when stuff happens, even when the stuff happens as a result of a bad choice you made, that none of that past stuff matters. All that matters is how you react to it right now. And you got to go into that and say, okay, I made this mistake. Now, what do I do next? Like, let me figure out what to do next. And if you keep taking that attitude, you end up in the right place eventually.
Yeah. And that's what I tell a lot of people buying, like, their first house. Like, maybe, I know it's probably just not me, but it seems like whenever I buy a property, either the lender, the appraiser, or the inspector always say, no, you can't do this. No, you can't do that. And as soon as they say no, I'm like, I'm back. You see the drawing board, my board? I'm like, yeah. All right. I'm like, all right, he said no to this. So what if I do this? All right, what if I do this? So it's kind of like, you're going to get a no when you buy a property, especially like the first time. You're going to get,
yeah,
the appraiser might come back low, the roof might be bad. So you're going to get bad information. But for a first time person who buying an investment property or a house, that make, when they hear no, you can't just give up. You going, if you hear no.
Yeah. I mean, listen, sometimes deals are bad and you shouldn't do them, right? Like, there's no question about that. So I don't want to, like, say, oh yeah, you know, every investment's perfect or whatever. But when it comes down to it, like, this is kind of like what Rich Dad Poor Dad said, right? Rich Dad Poor, like Robert Kiyosaki in his book said that the right question is, how can I do it? Not like, you know, can I do it? Or like, yeah, whatever, right? It's like, yeah, how? Yeah. The how is the key. So when you're looking at an investment property, your first real estate thing, like you were talking about, you know, somebody says no, then the question is, okay, well, if not that, then how do I make this work? Like, and if you approach everything from like, okay, that doesn't work. Now what, you know, how do I do it? If you just keep persistently trying to refine your strategy, sometimes the right answer is, okay, this deal doesn't work, I need to move to the next deal. But other times it is, oh, you know what? This bank doesn't want to loan me the money, but because I don't have credit and no money. But you know what? This other guy, like some random person that you meet, could be your uncle, it doesn't matter, right? Like Brandon Turner on the Bigger Pockets podcast said that everyone has an unfair advantage, and the trick is to find that unfair advantage. And I think that's exactly right. It's like, you know, you might have a rich uncle. If you have a rich uncle, you should go get money from your rich uncle to invest in your real estate deals, right? If you don't have a rich uncle, that doesn't make it unfair. It just is. You don't have that. So figure out what advantage you do have and go do that. Maybe you have better knowledge about a market, or maybe one of your friends has a rich uncle and you should go hang out with your friend and, like, and, you know, partner up with him and let him go ask for the money, right? Like, whatever the case is, like, it's like, how do I make this work is this trick, though. And that's the secret to life. It applies to real estate, but it applies to everything. Like, how do I get better grades? Okay, maybe I need to study more. Well, I don't like studying. Well, okay, how am I going to make it so that I can study in a way I like it? If you just constantly say how, and you point yourself at your goals, you eventually get there.
Exactly. All right, so I know this kind of switching lanes, but right now, if you had a loudspeaker and you could speak to the entire world, like, and say one sentence, what would you say? Like, because it seemed like you got a good balance on.
That's a great question. All right, give me 1 second. Good and bad stuff happens to everyone every single day. And the trick is to focus on the positive and minimize the negative. If you do that, you can give up bad days right now and never have another bad day the rest of your life.
Jeez, you hit it on. You got that question faster than I expected. So focus on the positive and don't worry about the negative, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. So, because like the thing, what I say is good and bad stuff happens every day. It just does. Good and bad stuff's going to happen to you. But if you focus on the positive, you minimize the negative, then on the balance, your day will be better than it would be if you focused on the negative. And if you have a string of good days, like, your life becomes better.
Yeah.
Because that's just the way it is. I mean, the other thing, actually, if I had more time to think about it, I would have probably said that the most important thing you can possibly do is live the best possible version of your life, whatever that means to you, and that you owe it to yourself, your family, your community, and really even to the entire world to do that, because if everyone lives the best version of their life, the whole world becomes a better place.
Right. And I was going to say something. You said, oh yeah, this is what it was. Because that was my biggest thing right there. Before I started, now I kind of write down my to-do list for the week. So I write down my goals. But before I started writing down, you know, I tell everybody, write, you know, the goal, the things you need to do, to-do list, write it down. Because I would only focus on what I didn't accomplish that week. Even though, you know, I might have sold a house, you know, walked the dog, exercised, but I only remember whatever I failed at or whatever I didn't get
accomplished. Right. But if you have that checklist, you can be like, wow, I had 10 goals. I did 9 of them.
Yes.
Like, I don't have to worry about the one I messed up on. Like, and that's powerful. But I'm going to tell you something. This will change your life if you do this. It will 100% change your life. I stole this from my good friend and coach, Dr. Jamil Syed, who people should hire because he's amazing. In fact, I just remembered something I had to tell him. But anyway, so Jamil says that what every person should do at the beginning of every year, and you could do it now, like the beginning of the summer, the beginning of fall, whatever, you know, each month, it doesn't really matter, but you should pick a time and you should write a letter to yourself and date that letter a year from now. So like, say it's January 1 today, and maybe today, like you might say, you know what? Okay, so we're in the middle of July right now. You might say, okay, you write the start of the letter. You say, today is July 1st, 2022, right? Like you write that right at the top of the letter.
Right.
And this has been an amazing year. I did all this stuff. And you just list like everything you want to accomplish for the whole year, right? In this letter. And you like basically write a letter congratulating yourself. You say, George, you did amazing, you know. By September, you had bought 10 extra properties. By December, you know, you had $100,000 in your bank account, you know, whatever it is, right? And it does, and you do it in different sections too. It's not like just finances and real estate, but it can be like personal life, relationships. You write all of this stuff out, right, in this letter. And then every single morning when you wake up, you read the letter out loud.
Wow.
And every single night before you go to bed, the last thing you do, you read the letter out loud. You do that every day for a year. You will be shocked at how much you get done in a year.
That is kind of like, it's kind of scary.
It is
because
next level goal setting. It is unbelievable. And you know what? You might get halfway through the year and go, you know what? I said I was going to write a book, but I don't want to write. You just cross it off and skip reading that section. Because it doesn't matter. Like your goals are going to change, but your big goals, the stuff that you really want to do, they don't change. Like I had in my letter a goal to like, go to 50 countries before I turn 50, right? Like that's one of my goals.
Right.
And 50 states and 7 continents. I call it the 50-50-57 goal, right? Making great progress on that, right? But in my letter I write, because it's like, I mean, I'm 43, so I've got 7 years. It's like, I made good progress on my 50-57 goal by going to 7 new countries this year. You know, I had to wait till after the vaccines came out. And travel opened back up, you know, like it says that in my letter, right? You know, and then it says things like, I'm super excited that I've made big progress on my plan to move to the Caribbean. I've saved up, you know, X dollars towards buying my beach house, you know, all this stuff, right? But also like, and I've got, you know, 100 new apartment complex, you know, whatever, you know, like all this stuff in there. And actually I've been kind of lazy about reading my goal sheet out loud right now for the last month or so, since I went to Puerto Rico for a month and I forgot to bring my letter with me. And so I got to get back on that. So I'm glad I brought this up now. I'm going to do it right now. I'm telling you, back on it.
That's kind of like swallowing a frog, because you like, cause it's one thing to think about it, but actually say like, what up? You know what I mean? It's like
a vision board though. Like if you you've got on your whiteboard there, I bet there's some stuff on there that's goal-like, you know, goal setting. Well, you know, you put that stuff on the wall and you look at it, it makes you do it, right? So like, it's the same thing with this letter. Like you write like a 2-3 page letter to yourself about all the stuff you accomplished the whole year. And you're going to be like, man, this is amazing. When you get to that next year and you look back and you've done 70, 80, 90% of the stuff on your list, it's amazing.
Yeah, amazing.
And it's really just about believing you can do it, because, you know, that's like right back to the ask how, not if, right? It's like, how can I afford this? Not can I afford it, right? Like you want a new Ferrari? Great. What do you need to do if you want a Ferrari? Don't say, I can't afford a Ferrari. It costs $250,000. I don't even know if that's true. I don't know what they cost because I don't want a Ferrari, right? But let's say it does cost $250,000. well, okay, what do I need to do to pay for $250,000? Okay, well, they're going to give me a 7-year loan. Okay, so it's going to be, you know, $7,000 a month on a Ferrari or whatever. Right. Okay, how can I afford that? I don't have $7,000 a month. Well, what if I buy this apartment complex? It makes $7,000 a month. Huh. Now I can afford a Ferrari, right? Okay. Right. Well, why? I don't have the money to buy an apartment complex. How am I going to do that? You know, like you just got to keep digging in until you figure it out, right? It's like, you know, it's like people ask, like, you know, you ask questions and then you say, okay, but why? Okay, but why? Okay, but why? And just keep doing that until you get to the back, to the root why, right?
Right.
That's your real why, the real reason you're doing what you're doing. It's the same thing with how, right? It's just like, how do you get to the, like, just keep asking how until you've got the plan.
I hope the people listening to this, you know, this is top level notch information you're giving out. But I was going to say, you know, before I started having guests on my podcast, me and my wife, like, we just used to talk about, you know, basically talk about financial business. So one of the questions I asked her, this was like maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, but I asked her, I said, she wasn't ready for it. I was like, what would you want your obituary to say? And
that's another Jamil thing, man. He's like, what do you want your obituary to say? And then, like, if you really want to get deep into that, you know what you say? How do you want to identify yourself personally, right? Like if you could distill into like one sentence who the essence of yourself, who are you? And, you know, for me, check this out. You see that? I don't know if you can read that or not, but there's this banner behind my head here.
Yes.
This banner says, Jeff Holst is the most interesting man in the world.
Is that like
the most interesting man in the world? No, it's not that I really think I'm the most interesting man in the world, but now I can frame my decisions among, like, if I was really interesting, how would I look at this? Like, my goal is to be an old guy in a bar someday and have some young punk kid sit next to me and think, I don't want to talk to that old guy, and then ask me a question or whatever, and like somehow we get into a conversation and he's like, holy crap, that guy's had a great life. Like, if you can get to the end of your life and like the young punk kid in the bar thinks you had a great life.
You did something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did. There's a, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Hunter S. Thompson, but he has this quote that says something to the effect of, you know, the secret to life is not to get to the end of your life with a bunch of reserve left in the tank, but to crash and burn into the goalpost at the end of life and say, wow, that was a heck of a ride.
Oh, man, that is.
You know what I mean? Like, you're just done. Like, you've done it all, because you're not going to regret the stuff you did. Like, you're just not. Like, I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro last year, the highest mountain in Africa. Wow. It was hard. My toenails still haven't grown back, and it's been a year and a half, right? And you know what? It's okay, because I don't regret it for one second. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. I thought I was going to die the whole time. I thought I was going to fail the whole time. I cried, literally cried at the top of this mountain. 19,300 feet, the highest point in all of Africa, looking down into a volcanic crater full of ice at the equator, right? Like actual glaciers in the equator, like at 1 degree off the equator. Right. And I thought, holy freaking crap, I'm at the top of this stupid mountain. And like, it makes me teary-eyed now just thinking about it. Like, because those are the kinds of things that matter. Jesse Itzler, who's like an amazing person. If people haven't read his books, they should. I just saw him this weekend speaking live in person in Dallas. Right. And he said that there's this concept, and I don't remember the exact name of it, but it's a Japanese concept where like you dedicate everything to one thing every so once in a while, and you just put everything into it. So you know, like for me, Kilimanjaro was that one thing. Right then, that day, that week, I was, everything that I did was focused on getting to the top of Kilimanjaro, right? And now I don't ever have to think about doing that again. I'm never going to climb Kilimanjaro again. It's super hard, but I'll always, always, always have that experience. And when I look back at 2020 and people say, oh, 2020 was terrible, COVID happened. And yeah, that's terrible. It sucks. But 2020 was like my best year ever. It really was. Like, I spent a month in Africa, for crying out loud. I climbed a freaking mountain.
Yeah.
I started a podcast. I wrote a book. like it was a good freaking year. And you know why it was a good year? Because when I got back from Kilimanjaro, I was like, I climbed that freaking mountain. I can do anything.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. How do you think that, you know, climbing that mountain, how does that affect your business? Because a lot of times when I go, like, I love taking trips because when I get away from business, I can think more clearly for some reason without, you know, actually being right in the
business. It's exactly true. Yeah, you spend some time thinking to yourself when you're not right immersed, your phone's not ringing constantly, you're not constantly checking emails. If you can get away for a minute, 2 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 days, a month, man, does that make your life better. And that's what happened to me when I quit working. You know, I quit working. I had a 6-month severance. I had about 50 units of real estate. I could live on it, but it wasn't going to make me feel rich. It wasn't going to be like you can go to Kilimanjaro for a month, right?
Right, right.
That was $20,000 just for my stuff, wow. Right? Like, you know, well, I was there for a whole month and food and airfare and mountain guides and all that stuff and gear and everything, right? And then my wife came and so there's tickets for her and all this stuff, right? But I mean, $20,000 plus I didn't work for a month, right? That right. also costs money. So, you know, let's call it $30,000. It cost me to go to Africa for a month, right?
Yes.
I could not have afforded that when I quit working. I've never gone back to work and I can afford it now. You know why I can afford it now? Because when I quit working, it gave me free time to think about how to make money more efficiently, better, spend less time in my business and make more money, grow my business without having to have more money, right? Those things, I took time to like read and to reflect and to travel. And now I make a lot more and I work less.
Yeah. People think,
and I think that's why buying back your time is so important, right? If you, because it frees you up to figure out how to be really good.
Yeah. I think it was a book. Oh my God. It's going, it was a book. I think the Doing Business by the Good Book. I believe that's it. Right over here. Yes, that's a book you definitely should read by David.
I'll have to check that. It's Doing Business by the Good Book. All right.
Yes, it's basically doing business kind of the biblical way, but
yeah,
he talked about a guy, you know, how was it? I think you probably heard this story, but they were trying to figure out how to get this machine to run, and the guy came in with the hammer, you know, boop boop, and he was like, "That'll be $1 million." You know, and it's not that you were paying him for his time, but his knowledge. But when, yeah. When I tell people, also in the book, it was the most important time is time to think. That's what it was.
Yeah.
So, because I like a lot of friends of mine, you know, I'm 32 years old. So most of my friends work, you know, 40, 50 hours a week. That's just, you know.
What most people do that period until they die. I mean, that's the reality of life. I mean, it's sad, but it's true. So yeah, your friends work. But most of my friends work, by the way, 40, 50 hours a week, and I'm 43. So, I mean, it's not changing.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're working like that, you don't have time to think.
It's true.
You know, and it's like, yeah, when I think, yeah, I don't get paid for that. I don't get paid for thinking. But it's something about, you know, that quietness, you know, you figure out things, you know, it's kind of like
you do, but you do get paid for thinking. So that's the thing, right? Like, you don't get paid for thinking if your job is to flip burgers at McDonald's, but you know where you get paid to think? In your business, because you figure this stuff out and now you figure out a way to save yourself. You might take a week off and you might come back with an idea that makes you $100,000 or $1 million or saves you $1 million in your business. And the more time, like, honestly, the more time I take off, the easier it is to make money. I know that sounds crazy, but I swear the more time I take off, the easier it becomes to make money. When I get bogged down in work is right. when I stop making money.
Yeah. It makes totally sense to me because I get it. It's like, I'm glad it's confirmation actually, because my next question was, how did you scale? You know, you quit your job. You said you had 50 units. So,
yeah.
You know, how was you able to, you're making less money evidently because you quit your job. So
a lot less. I made $250,000 the last year at my job. And right. my real estate didn't make that. It didn't make anywhere near that. Like, it was a lot less money. And it was, I was afraid actually. And I thought, well, I got to figure out how to make some money. So I flipped a duplex, right? And then I was like, well, that actually wasn't that hard. I better do that again. So I did another one. And then I was like, oh, you know what? Apartments are pretty awesome. I started buying apartments, like with no job. you know? And I was just like, well, I can figure this out. Like, it seems like a good thing. And I started going to real estate conferences and learning what other people were doing and like seeing what worked for them. Stuff that I didn't have time to do when I had a job.
You know, and I seen a lot of people went to that Dallas conference. And I mean, I think maybe...
There was two conferences in Dallas this weekend. The same. They were right across town from each other. They were both good, from what I understand. I only went to one of them, but conferences are great. I mean, Robert Kiyosaki, the Rich Dad guy, he says that educating yourself is the most important thing you can do. But he also says that the type of education that you need to do is you need to educate yourself in informal settings, conferences, reading, podcasts, stuff like that. So people listening to the show, it's a great, great way to learn without getting a pile of student loans, right? That isn't going to help you any. Like, find people that are doing the stuff that you want to do and follow them. Like, you know, follow them on Instagram. It doesn't matter. Like, just learn what they're doing and get inspired by what they're doing. And like this conference I went to, most of it was about inspiration, almost more than real estate, even though it was a multifamily real estate investing conference, you know?
Right.
You meet people that are doing bigger deals than you, and you go, well, if they can do it, I can do it, you know? And you hear people that are talking about, you know, different strategies, and you go, oh, you know what, I can learn that. Or you get around people that you make new partnerships. I mean, it's just actually amazing how great it has been for me to do those kind of things. And last year was tough because of that. Like, you know, there were no conferences last year. I was speaking at conferences in 2019. I spoke at one March 6th of 2020, and I haven't spoken at one since, right? Because the economy, just that sort of thing went away. In fact, this last weekend was the first time I've been in a conference since then at all, like even as an attendee.
And that's what I was going to ask. What do you get, like, I guess I haven't been to a lot of conferences, but what do you like? I don't want to go somewhere and it's the same old thing. What do you get out of, you know, everything is like-minded people. What's the best thing to get out of going to these conferences with these people?
So to me, I mean, of course, it depends on what your goals are, right? Like, some people go there and they want to buy into mentorship programs and stuff. That's never been my thing. I just like to go there, and I always feel like I'm going to meet some people that are going to impact my life. And I'm going to pick up a few things here or there that make a big difference. And I'll give you a couple of examples really quick. So I went to this conference, the Real Estate Guy Secrets to Successful Syndication. Okay.
Right.
It's in Dallas. This was February of 2019, I think. February 2019. I'm sitting in this conference. They're talking about syndicating, which is raising money to buy apartment complexes. And this lawyer gets up, and she explains how to legally raise money. And I was like, holy crap, I never thought about this at all, right? Like, I'm a lawyer and I didn't know this area of the law. And I go out afterwards and I walk up to her booth and I start talking to her. And I'm wearing an old fashioned real estate t-shirt. I have a show called Old Fashioned Real Estate, right?
Right.
And she says, and we had just started the show. We had like 12 subscribers, literally, like on YouTube, and like we weren't even on the podcasting apps and stuff. We just had 12 subscribers on YouTube.
Right.
And she says, oh, I love your show. I go, you haven't seen my show. There's no way, right? Like, we have 12 subscribers. And she's like, Grant Cardone's attorney, like literally, like Grant Cardone's attorney, right? Like, I'm like, I can't even believe I'm talking to this awesome person.
Right.
And she's like, I love your show. I want to be on your show.
What?
I'm like, okay, we don't have guests. Like, our show doesn't have guests. So I say to her, we don't have guests. It's not the way our world works, you know, but if you want to come to Chattanooga, she lives in Southern California. I didn't know that at the time, but I knew she didn't live in Chattanooga. I said, you want to come to Chattanooga and film in person? We drink bourbon and talk about real estate. That's what we do. If you want to come to Chattanooga and film in person, then you can be on my show. And she's like, yep, I'll do it. And I'm like, okay. And I went and told my partner, and he goes, nah, she's never going to come on our show. You know, like, that's not going to happen. And I assumed he was right, because, you know, it just seemed crazy. I'll tell the rest of that story in a second. The same conference, I'm sitting there, right? So I've met this attorney, that, you know, whatever. This guy gets up on the stage. He starts talking about the tax advantages of something called cost segregation. Doesn't matter what it is. But basically, I heard that speech, and I haven't paid taxes since. That's literally what happened at a conference, right? So I was going to have to pay in, and I got a refund that year.
Jeez.
Because of that one talk. Little nugget, something I didn't know about that I learned about. Now, the rest of the conference, it might have been terrible. It doesn't matter, because that little tiny thing saved me hundreds of thousands of dollars since then. Now, flash forward, I go to another conference in Dallas. I pay big money for a VIP ticket because I want to meet Robert Kiyosaki, right? I want to shake his hand, get my picture taken with him.
Did you meet Robert Kiyosaki?
My picture taken with him, yeah. VIP experience. It was like $1,000 to like shake his hand for 2 seconds. I don't know if it was worth it or not, but I did because I wanted to do that, right? So I go to this conference. The real estate guys, the ones that I was at the first conference, they are emceeing the second conference. It's not their conference, it's someone else's conference, but they're there as a guest. And the one real estate guy, he climbed Kilimanjaro, says to me, we start talking about Kilimanjaro, whatever, right? We're in this VIP reception area. And he walks up to me with Robert Kiyosaki and he goes, Robert, I want you to meet my friend Jeff, who's going to climb Kilimanjaro this year. So we end up talking about Kilimanjaro. So like, this is like full circle, right? So like, one, do big things because it impresses people, right? I hadn't even done it yet. And it got introduced to Robert Kiyosaki. Kiyosaki's like, oh, I've always wanted to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And I say, you should come climb Mount Kilimanjaro with me, right? Didn't happen. Didn't happen, right? But this young lady walks up and she says, because, you know, she wants to talk to Kiyosaki like everyone else probably. But and then Robert Kiyosaki and Robert Helms walk away. But she walks up and starts talking to me. She says, I still want to do your show, right?
Yeah.
This is like 6 months later at a different conference.
Jeez.
Oh, I'm not even wearing an old-fashioned real estate shirt anymore. And I'm like, she remembers me, right?
Yeah.
And I go, well, we film in Chattanooga and we never have guests. If you want to come there, you can. She says, how close is Chattanooga to Nashville? So long story short, it turns out we're both going to be at a conference in Nashville. So is my partner. I said, well, you know what? We'll film in Nashville then. That'll be fine. We'll find a place. We'll film in Nashville. And she's perfect. She's the first guest we ever had on our show. Her name is Jillian Sidoti. Jillian was Grant Cardone's attorney.
Jeez.
Right? We go to an after party. She's a speaker at the Bigger Pockets convention, right? We go to an after party. We're meeting people like Brandon Turner, Josh Dorkin, Matt Faircloth, like all these big Bigger Pocket people names, right? And Jillian says to me, my phone's dead and I need an Uber back to the hotel because everyone's staying at the same hotel and we're like 15 minutes away at this after party. And I was like, you know what? I'm tired. Like, let's just grab an Uber and go. So we're riding in the car on the way back to the hotel and I'm just telling her about my life. She's telling me about her life. It's the first time I've had a conversation with her ever other than these like quick, you know, 2 minute conversations. And I don't think much of it. I was like, well, that was really cool. Like, this is just really cool. I got to meet all these people that I like, you know, look up to. And then I got to ride in an Uber with Jillian. It was amazing. And I didn't think anything of it. And like a week later, she texts me and says, I need to talk to you. I'm like, okay. So I call her and she says, I want to do a podcast with you. And I go, we just did my podcast, right? And then she says, no, you don't understand. I want to do a podcast with you. Like, I want to start a new podcast with you. And now she's my partner.
Whoa.
See what I'm saying? So what do I get out of conferences? I meet amazing people. I mean, I became friends with Harry Dent, who's an economist at a conference once. And I went and hung out with him in Puerto Rico 3 times now. He's famous. He wrote a bunch of best-selling books. When I was in high school, I read his books and I was like, this guy's awesome. And now like I have his cell phone number because of the conference, you know, but not everyone who goes to a conference is going to do that. But you know, if you go to a conference and you believe that you're going to get something out of it and you pay attention and you fully engage and you like meet people and you don't seek what can they give me? You say, what value can I provide them? And you don't get starstruck. If you see somebody who you look up to, just have a conversation with them. They want normal conversations in their lives. And if you do those things, then you might become their friends. Actually, you know, Bigger Pockets author Matt Faircloth and I were chatting today, actually, on Facebook Messenger about the Bigger Pockets conference that's coming up this year. I'm like, people should go to that conference. It's a cool conference. I'm not selling it. Anything for it. I don't care. But like, it's coming up. It's in New Orleans, for crying out loud. Like, New Orleans is a fun place to hang out, and you're going to meet cool people. There's going to be 1,000 people there. I guarantee you at least one or two of those people are going to impact your life if you open yourself up to them.
I think I'm going. When is that?
Early October, I think. Even if it's not that one, just pick a couple.
No. I have to tell myself I'm going because a lot of people I talk to, you know, they go to the conference, and I only been to one, you know, real estate conference my whole life. And that was, I don't know if you hear this guy, but you definitely, I need him to go in bigger pockets, but you ever heard of Ben Mallott? You ever heard of him?
Oh yeah, I know Ben. I mean, I don't know him, but I know who he is. Yeah.
So I went, he was in a conference in West Palm Beach, him and Max Maxwell, another real estate guy. Mm-hmm. So I tell my cousin, I'm going to this conference. And I say, my goal was to meet Ben Mallott. That's literally because, you know, I went and watched him on YouTube. So it was like in January, and I bought the ticket in like November. So what I did was I rented a car that I like. I rented like a brand new F-150 because I was going to the conference as like I wanted to go there like I was going to be a speaker. Even though I wasn't a speaker, I was going there like I was. So I literally put on a full suit, you know. Full suit. I went to the conference. I drove my car that I really, really want, you know.
Yeah, so you're modeling the life you want, man.
Yes.
If you want to speak at a conference, I can tell this about you. You want to be invited to speak at a conference.
Yes.
Well, you got to go to conferences and hear what they do there. That's how you're going
to
learn.
Yeah, so I drove to the conference. They give you little badges to make you look important, right? I put the little badge, I think my name on it. We in there. But I'm in the conference in West Palm Beach, and like they got like amateur guests before, you know, the big guys come on. And they like, how many people own one house? Two houses. Nobody there own any properties. So I'm like, this is weird.
Yeah.
So it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. So I'm thinking like everybody who go to conferences are wannabes. That's how I'm thinking.
No, but there are a lot of that, right? So, but like, you also see people that actually are doing stuff. Like me, I'm at a conference, right?
Right.
Like, and I have more than one house. Different conferences, different amounts of people, whatever, like different groups, maybe if you'd gone to that same conference the next year, there would have been tons of people that had real estate there. Everyone's going for the same thing. I will be honest, the Bigger Pockets convention, more newbies than super experienced real estate investors, you know, like their marketing is towards people getting started in real estate. I mean, if you want to go to a conference where everyone has 1,000 units of apartments, then you're going to have the opposite problem, right? You're going to be like, how many people here have less than 100 apartments? You know what I mean? Right. And you're not going to, otherwise you're not going to fit in, right? Yep. So you got to kind of like look at, you know, what's the audience, what's the target audience, and is that an audience that you feel comfortable with? Because like, it sounds like you might have went to the wrong conference for you. It might have been a great conference for them, but it wasn't the right one for you.
Yeah, but when I got to the conference, so that what struck me first. I'm like, there's a lot of people who wannabes in here.
Yeah.
So immediately I'm like, well, I know more information than a lot of people in here. So I started to feel like, okay, because I have more than most properties than I talked to. I have more properties than most of the people I was talking to. So all of a sudden, it's the last, Ben Miles, the last person. So it's like break time. So he walks in, everybody's like, I'm even like, dang, that's like Ben Miles, you know, right in front of me.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? Of course.
So I'm sitting there eating my hot dog, drink. He goes, you know, over to the table. His son come, you know, I'm like, hey, what I said? I don't know what I said, but his son came to my table and I was like, hey, you think I can get a picture with Ben? He was like, go up and ask him. So I'm like, I didn't go up and ask him, but his son stayed at my table. So when after Ben got his hot dog, he came to the table because his son was at my table.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, so we sitting there, and he got a camera guy with him on, you know, recording YouTube, whatever.
Sure.
But he was like, he asked me, like, one of his friends asked me, was the guy with me my bodyguard? I'm like, no, I just met, because the guy with me had on like a Grant Cardone hat, and I got on like a full suit.
Nice.
So he kind of looked at like, I'm like, no, I just met this guy. So Ben started talking to me. He was like, where you from? I'm like, I'm in Vero Beach. He was like, oh man, we just bought like 250 unit apartments there. I'm like, what? He was like, man, you can be the boots on the ground for me. You know, I need to fill it up.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about, right?
Yes. So he was like, give my card to this guy. I gave my card to him. You know, I came to this conference just to meet him because everybody was like, man, you're not going to meet Ben. It's like 500 people there. Not only did he got my number, you know what I mean? Like, maybe a month later, I get a random phone call. Ben want to speak to you. I'm like, no way. And
yeah, you know, see, that's what I'm saying. Like that's the magic of conferences, right? Yeah. Like, you're not gonna necessarily always come away with like, I get to hang out. Like, Kiyosaki didn't climb Mount Kilimanjaro with me. That would have been amazing. When I went to this conference this weekend, I had a chance to talk to I'm drawing a mental blank now. I had a chance to talk to Damon John. Damon John, right? Just for like a minute, you know, he's not going to call me. We're not friends, right? I mean, he doesn't have my number. I get that. I don't have his, but like, it was cool, right? Like, I got my picture taken with Damon John. Like, but that's awesome, right? I didn't expect it, but it happened. And Brandon Turner was there, like from Bigger Pockets, right? So Brandon Turner was there. And one of my friends who was on the BP podcast was there. And she walked up to Brandon and introduced me to him. So I get to like get my picture taken with Brandon Turner. I mean, that's just cool, right?
Right.
Now, Brandon's probably not calling me either, right? Like, I get that, right? Like, we're not friends. But sometimes you're going to form a connection with people when you're at these things. And it might not be one of the speakers. It might not be. You might have went there and said, I want to see Ben, and ended up becoming friends with his kid or with one of the other speakers that did something awesome that you never even heard of until you were there, right? And that's how you have to look at that stuff. Like, the cost of going to a conference is relatively small if you get a little bit of positive out of it, because it can change the trajectory of your investment career.
Yeah, definitely.
It gets you one deal. It was worth it for sure.
Right. Yeah. And I started working for Ben. I was filling up the apartment complex, you know?
So that conference paid for itself.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So you need to go to more conferences. It may be the Bigger Pockets one, but it could be any of them.
Right.
Pick one that fits you. I mean, there's all sorts of people doing multifamily conferences, single family conferences, note buying conferences. I mean, there's conferences that are not real estate conferences that are probably worth going to, insurance conferences. I don't know. There's all kinds of options.
Right. Oh man, this is a great opportunity. So, all right, we're going to wrap it up almost.
Sure.
What is the biggest problem right now you're currently trying to solve in your business?
Oh, well, you say in my business, that's different. I thought you were just going to say the biggest problem I want to solve, and that's like world peace or something, you know, like, it's not really. I mean, that'd be awesome if I could figure that out.
But, right.
Actually, if I were, let me answer that question first. The real answer to the biggest problem I'm trying to solve is not necessarily in my business.
Right.
I want to help a million people live the best version of their life. I really do. Like, so to me, I think that too many people are living paycheck to paycheck. I think too many people are living, for the weekend or for their retirement, and they're not pursuing their life fully and completely and with passion. And so that to me, the thing that I would like to fix is that. Now, as far as my business goes, my real estate business, it's pretty good right now. it's pretty good. Like, I mean, we always have some little thing here or there, but like, it's nothing big.
Right.
Now I have another business, Last Life Ever. I don't know if I told you about that or not. Last Life Ever is the show I started with Jillian Sidoti, the securities attorney.
I think the YouTube video, right? Is it? You got a
YouTube video? Yeah, yeah. So we got some YouTube videos and we got some shows and we've interviewed some cool people. We don't make any money at all on that podcast.
Right.
It's hard to make money on that. And that's not a real estate business. It's just a podcast and a Facebook group and like some free stuff we give away and some charity stuff that we do. And we have this foundation that we created where we do some charity stuff through that. All that stuff is amazing and fantastic. But I'd really like to figure out how to make money, because I know that if we make money in that company, we will be able to help more people. It's not about getting rich at this point. Like, I can pay my bills. I'm good with that, right? I can do what I need to do. I want to make piles of money with Last Life Ever, though, because then we can give piles of money away and we can make people we can reach a million people. And that's the real goal. Like, that's what I was saying earlier. So in a way, full circle, the real big problem that I want to solve is also the problem I want to solve in my business, because I think that we can do it together. And I think that's how you live the best version of your life, is you do everything.
Well, from just listening to you say that, one of the things I can think of is on Mondays, right? Mondays, I put out my podcast.
Yeah.
Mondays are when people schedule time to talk to me about helping them with their, you know, financial freedom or real estate
property. Sure.
Monday is the day after the weekend. And they say, dang it, I didn't do enough where I don't have to go back to work.
It's true.
So I feel like, I mean, Monday is an important day, you know, because you're trying to get people to live that best life. And like when I was a mailman, the best, like I used to deliver mail to a lot of businesses. And
sure,
on Monday, they would be mean mugging me. On Friday, they would be smiling at me, you know, dentist office.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's so freaking sad, man, because weekends are stupid short. Like, I wake up every day with a smile, man. I'm happy all the time. Right. Like, does bad stuff happen to me? Like I said, yeah, of course it does. Like, I mean, every time bad stuff happens to everyone. But like, there's just like no way, right? Like, I'm looking like right here. Like, check that out. Boom. Smiley right. face paddle to remind myself to be happy all right. the time. Right. I don't even need this stinking thing because I know it already.
Right.
So, actually, ironically, this came from like an online conference I did. They sent it to me in the mail.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, your goal, Monday is the day where people, you know, like when they get off work and they be like, man, I really, really don't like.
Yeah. That's why our show comes out on Monday nights, man. I'm 100% agreeing with you on that.
Yeah. That's what I noticed too. When I put out my podcast or just even time when people book time, like, cause I help people, you know, as far as, cause I basically quit my job, what, 2-3 years ago now as a mailman. And I mean, it's,
I was not giving you the fire, man.
Oh, the fire.
That's awesome. You quit your job. Good job.
Yeah. Hey, I quit my job and I was in the library the next week filling out applications. That's how scared I was, you know?
Yeah,
I was
like,
but you know, it was just, I guess you don't know. You know, being, you know,
it's tough, man. It's not easy. And frankly, real estate isn't for everyone. Like, if it was for everyone, I wouldn't have to do the rest of the stuff I do. I could just tell people, hey, let me help you invest in real estate, and everyone would be happy, right?
Right.
But not everyone wants to. I mean, I had this conversation with my sister just the other day. I said, listen, you got this equity in your house. Like, let me help you tap into that, and we'll go buy you a rental property, and you'll have some extra money, and you'll still have the same amount, but you'll be growing faster. And she's like, I don't want to do that. I don't like that. It scares me. Yeah. You know, and like, you could say that's a limiting belief, but you know what? She has a good job. She's got good savings. She's got her house almost paid off. Her husband has a good job. They like their careers. They're happy. Their family's happy. Like, that's okay. Like, you know what? Like, as long as they're actually pursuing their best life, that's all that matters, right? She's got a ton of vacation time because she's had this job for a long time. It's not for me, right? It's not how I want to live my life, but it's how she wants to live her life. And that's actually how I got into Last Life Ever. Like, I was trying to help people invest in real estate, and some people would say to me, oh, it's too scary, it's too risky, it's too this, it's too that. You know, some of that's excuses. But one person said to me one day, I walked into a Waffle House, right? Yeah, Waffle House down there in Florida,
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I walk into a Waffle House and I sit down and I'm talking to this girl behind the counter. You know, the servers are like right in front of you or whatever, right?
Right.
And I talk to this girl and I say to her, what is your dream? Like, what do you want to do with your life?
She was,
you know, stuck. You know what she said?
What?
She was about 45, 50 years old. She said, when I was a little girl, I used to go to Waffle House with my dad. And I thought, that's the coolest job in the world. And so I always wanted to be a mom, and I wanted to work part-time at a Waffle House.
She's happy,
and now,
right?
I'm a mom, and I work part-time at a Waffle House. And I went, holy F.
So she's happy.
Yeah, I looked at her, and I said, holy F. I mean, like, I was, in my head, I was cussing to myself. Because I just spent, like, the last 2 years trying to convince everyone I know they should invest in real estate immediately. And I realized this lady, she doesn't need to invest in real estate.
Nope.
She's living her life exactly on her own terms. And then I was like, I need to figure out how to help other people do that. Cause I know almost nobody that lives their life on their own terms. The reason I love real estate It's because it lets me live my life on my terms. You know why it does that for me? Because I love real estate. If I didn't love real estate, I'd be miserable all the time.
Yeah. The question is, I'm going to ask you first before I say this. If God whispered in your ear, nobody could hear, but he was like, Jeffrey, I want you to go out onto the land and do this. What do you think he said?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's a great question. So I don't want to speak for the divine, holy God, right? Like that's like, but like what the call that I feel in my being, in my heart now is different than it was before. And I think it took quitting my job and having time to think and all that stuff we talked about earlier to get to this point. But I really, truly believe that what he wants me to do is help people find their way to their best lives. Like I really do. And there's a religious component to that. Like Jillian and I, and that's what our show is, right? And she, by the way, she has since quit practicing law after meeting me and telling her that she should pursue her best life. And it makes me stupid happy, right? Like she's a super successful real estate syndication attorney. And now she's like, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to live my life on my own terms. And that's what I'm passionate about. And helping her do that has been like one of the great joys in my life. But helping other people do what they want to do is like huge to me. Like this weekend at a conference, this young lady sitting behind me tapped me on the shoulder and said, are you Jeff Holst from Last Life Ever? And I said, yeah, never been recognized before, right? Like ever. Except for the time Jillian said she liked my show, which I know she was lying. Right. She's probably still hasn't admitted it, but I know she was. Right. But this girl says this to me and I go, yeah, I am. She goes, you changed my life. And she started like getting emotional and said, you know, last year you had the step challenge and I started doing it and now I've lost all this weight and like I'm super happy compared to where I was last year. And I was like, that's what I need to be doing with the rest of my life. Right there. I don't need to get paid. I like I said, if I make money with it, it's just so that we can make more money, so that we can give more money away, so we can help more people, you know, not just on charity, but we can spend money on Facebook ads so more people find out about our philosophy, the Last Life Ever philosophy.
Yeah, which, and that was my biggest thing, because a lot of people seen my success in real estate and they were like, I'm finna go get my real estate license. I'm like, hold up. You know, I love real estate. That's my natural, you know, I failed every test in school. Real estate, sure. I passed every test first try, you know.
Because you love it. Yeah, it's so much easier when you love what you're doing.
Yeah, so I tell people, you know, real estate come natural to me. Like, people say, how long you been doing it? You know, my dad owned properties my whole life, so I've really been doing it since I was a kid. Yeah, I was going to properties, you know, doing a little stuff, not knowing I was learning at maybe 10, 12. I didn't know I was learning, but everything I was watching, for some reason, it stayed, like, back here. You know, so once I got done playing around with life, being a mailman and stuff, I started using all them things I was seeing. You know, I didn't really try to do it or try to learn it. It was just already there. I just didn't tap into it. So I tell people, I try to tell people, before you go get your real estate license or start buying houses, you know, the thing is not that. It's to find out what your gift is and what your purpose is.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to help people do. Because like all my cousins, nephews, they like, George, I want to invest in real estate. I want to invest in real estate. And I know they want to do it just because they see me doing it. But I'm like, no, I want you to find out.
That's like watching like a movie star and being like, I want to be a movie star because it's got a, you know, hot wife or whatever. Like,
right.
That's cool and everything. But like, you know, what did he have to do to get there? Like, they need to see the whole picture, right? Like, it's kind of like, we live in a great time to be real estate investors and entrepreneurs because entrepreneurs are sexy now, man. People love it. Everyone wants to be an entrepreneur. It used to not be like that. When I was a little kid, like you were like, oh, that's like a used car salesman, the guy who's a real estate investor. It's like, you know, that's sleazy or something. You know, he's taking advantage of people. But now people are like, oh, I want to be a real estate investor, which is awesome. But the problem is, it's like what you were saying about Instagram and not like sharing the struggles and the failures. If you only see like, here's me in front of this apartment complex, isn't it great? Like all these people are paying me. And that's important. Like, I understand why people share those kind of posts. I share them, right? But the reality is, there's a lot of stuff that happens behind the scene. It's like that iceberg, you know, that like meme that goes around where just the tip of the iceberg is above the water and all the hard stuff is below the water. You don't see it. That's how it is in life.
Right.
And like, if you're not passionate about it, you're not going to do the hard stuff. You're never going to get to the tip of the iceberg.
If I didn't love real estate, trust me, I would have been out because I've been, you know, through so much crap and so many deals. And like, as a real estate agent, I think like most people, like, I can't believe, you know, you keep going. It's not because I love it. You know what I mean? It's just like, I can't really give up. It's like, I try to not to think about it, but that's the first thing I think about, you know?
Yes. Well, we're going to have to go do some real estate agent buying sprees because I need to buy some stuff in South Florida. That sounds cool. Let's buy some stuff.
I'm George the Real Estate. You're talking to the right guy.
All right. I love it.
So, yeah. All right. Last five questions, just like the new American dream, fave five.
All right. I'm ready.
If I could spend a day with somebody for a date, who would it be if you could spend a day?
If I could, okay. You said if I could, and I was like, I don't know who you'd spend your time
with. No, my bad.
I knew what you meant, though. I got it. I'm with you now. Yeah. Alive or dead, or doesn't it matter?
Nobody ever said that. I would say alive, you know?
Somebody okay, alive, yeah.
You can pick that brain or whatever, just talk, you know, get some knowledge.
Oh, man. The name that comes to my mind is so damn controversial. Excuse my language. I hate to almost say
Donald Trump.
It is Donald Trump. Like, that guy, man. Like, it does. I mean, forget about the politics because the guy's got issues. There's no doubt. But, like, the way he looks at the world is insane. Like, and if you read his books, like, the perspective is shocking, but it makes so much sense a lot of the time. Elon Musk's another guy. I would love to spend time with Elon Musk. Richard Branson. Let's forget about Donald Trump. I want Richard Branson. That's the one. I want Richard Branson. Richard Branson,
yeah.
Yeah, because that guy, like, he just does it right. Like, first billionaire in space.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yes. Richard Branson.
You know, like, how do you make those decisions? You know, like, a dyslexic, you know, poor kid in England, and now he owns a spaceship.
You can't.
I mean, like, that's just insane. Like, I want to know what he knows.
Wait, do you know Steve Sims?
I don't.
Okay, you definitely need to talk to him.
Okay, you know, cool. Connect me to him.
The guy who wrote the book Bluefish. And
I don't. Yeah, I mean, I know of it, sort of, but not really.
Oh, you're okay.
Yeah.
All right. A lesson you learned you wish you knew 10 years ago.
Just do it. Start now. Like, don't wait. You only get one chance. It's all the same thing.
Okay. Got it. A book that changed your life.
I mean, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is probably the most obvious one, but I think everyone who answers that probably says that. So I'm going to tell you one that no one probably ever will answer, ever say. Michael Crichton's Travels. So Michael Crichton's the author of Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Right? He is the only guy who ever, in fact, if you said dead was allowed, that's the one I'd want to hang out with, is Michael Crichton. He's dead, but I'd like to hang out with him. It's probably not going to happen, though. I'm just going to go out on a limb here.
Yeah.
But he's the only guy ever to have the number one best-selling movie, number one best-selling book, and number one best-selling television show all at the same time.
Jeez.
And he's a Harvard-trained medical doctor.
Wait, he wrote Jurassic Park movies?
The movies, yeah. He wrote the book, the movie. You know, the Westworld show was based on a movie he wrote. He was a director, an actor, he did everything. Like, wow. The Jurassic Park is, like, one of his more famous. But, I mean, you know the show ER?
Yes.
He wrote that too. It was his idea. He was executive producer the whole time on that show until he died.
Damn, there's a lot of great people in the world.
Yeah. Now, Michael Crichton, his book Travels is all about his experiences traveling the world. And he talks about climbing Mount Kilimanjaro in that book. And that's why I say it changed my life, because that's what planted the seed in my head that, like, I should go try to climb Mount Kilimanjaro.
Jeez. Got it. All right. This is just an extra question, because you said you wouldn't buy a Ferrari. So what do you splurge money on?
Travel. But I really want a Cybertruck, the Tesla Cybertruck. Oh,
yeah,
I put a deposit down on it, so I'll probably buy one.
Okay. Wow. Hey, you are living your best life. All right. I figure this is a question, but I can guess it. Your hobbies is traveling.
Yeah. Also, I like to collect stuff. So I have art, books, stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Rare books, rare art, that kind of thing.
Okay. So, all right. Last question. The new American dream, the name of the podcast, your old American dream would be, you would be a lawyer. You'd probably be helping me with real estate or helping somebody with, you know, being a lawyer. That would be the old American dream. What is your version of the new American dream?
I love that question. So, I mean, it's what I was saying earlier, and this is what we always talk about at the Last Life Ever podcast. It's about helping a million people live the best version of their lives and to reach out to them and help them in whatever capacity we can, whether that is help them by feeding them or whether that's help them by inspiring them to do the big things. And that's even better, because if I can get George, right, to do big things, he's going to help a bunch of people too. And that's going to make the whole world better.
Most definitely. I think you have a bigger impact on people than you actually know. That's it.
Well, I hope so.
Well, yeah. Hey, thanks for coming on the show. Let the people know if they want to reach out your podcast or
social media. Yeah, so at Jeffrey Holst on Instagram is, I do a lot on Instagram these days. I think that's where you found me actually on Instagram, but that's a good place. And then the Last Life Ever private group on Facebook, it's free. We don't sell you anything. Like, we haven't nothing. We haven't even figured out how to make money, like I said earlier. So that's where I spend most of my time, is hanging out in that group with amazing people doing amazing things and sharing their struggles and their successes. So I would definitely recommend people join that group as well. Otherwise, Google me and you'll find me all over the place.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Jeffrey, for your time. I appreciate it.
And hey, thank you.
Yes.